Today, the missing homes that won't get built. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. As the dust settles on the election, with Labour back on a 34.69% first preference vote, a number reflective, by the way, of the latest UK election too, where the party with the landslide has a narrow base of primary supporters, one figure which remains is that the promise to build 1.2 million homes over 5 years, even if the start date for the counting seems to have moved. Back in March, before the election shenanigans, industrial lobby group the Urban Development Institute of Australia, in a new report, said that the delivery of new homes will fall 393,000 short of the target for the combined capital cities alone by 2029. The National Housing Accord, launched a couple of years ago, agreed to target of 1.2 million new homes to be delivered over the 5 years from the middle of 2024. It was an aspirational target with nothing much beneath. The UDIA report showed that the production rate of both greenfield homes and apartments has slowed dramatically below average. It forecasts an 11% decline in new dwelling production in 2025, a slowdown that will ultimately put upward pressure on prices for all kinds of housing. A key insight from this year's research is that while there has been some positive signs of improved supply activity in the national greenfield market, the apartment and multi-unit sector remains mired in a near-record low level of output, which is weighing heavily on aggregate dwelling production, they said. Actually, the latest ABS data on building approvals, released on the 6th of May to cover the March 2025 period, again underscores the gap between the government's aspirations and the results on the ground. The ABS reported that total dwellings approved fell 8.8% to 15,220, and within that, private sector houses fell 4.5% to 8,804, while private sector dwellings, excluding houses, fell 15.1% to 6,104. This, of course, is way off target, as AMP analysis shows in this chart. Whilst the unit approvals are lumpy, because a single approval can contain multiple dwellings, the trends are horribly clear. And by the way, approvals for total dwellings fell in most states. Tasmania was down 42.2%, Victoria was down 31.6%, Western Australia was down 20.5%, and South Australia was down 11.9%. New South Wales actually rose 19.6% and Queensland rose 5.8% in March. Approvals for private sector houses were mixed, with Victoria down 10%, Queensland down 8%, and New South Wales down 2.5%, while Western Australia was up 10.3% and South Australia up 4.6%. Separate research by Mandela Partners, commissioned by the Property Council, projected a shortfall of 462,000 homes over the next 5 years, and extrapolating the costs of that shortfall in terms of higher rents, the report estimated that renters could save $90 a week if the supply gap were bridged. Under a $3 billion federal government scheme, states and territories that exceed their housing targets will receive a bonus, with payments beginning in the 2029 financial year. Missing the target by 462,000 new homes by July 2029 would set off a housing affordability time bomb, the Property Council said. They called for the bonus pool to be doubled to $6 billion, with payments brought forward and the scheme extended to 7 years. Now, again, the scale of the problem was highlighted in another recent AFR report titled "The Problem with Western Sydney's 35,000 Unbuilt Homes." They said that more than 35,000 apartments and townhouses approved for development are sitting unbuilt in Western Sydney, an area expected to absorb more than half the New South Wales forecast population growth to 2041, according to industry research. Increased material and construction costs, land prices, finance fees, and more competition for a limited number of qualified trades are all contributing to the holdup. By the way, they claim, though, that the gridlock is due not to land banking, but to high costs. But then, of course, much of this research comes direct from the building and property sector, so I don't take that claim too seriously. And clearly, if the costs are too high to build, then builders will hold the land later, making a profit on the way. The Department of Planning indicates that Western Sydney needs around 24,000 new dwellings each year to service forecast population growth, but only 5,405 homes were under construction. That's a 22.5% of the annual demand. While residential building costs are moderating somewhat, they were just up 0.5% in the December quarter, compared to 15% in 21 through 22, according to the ABS. The truth is construction costs have increased exponentially, while home prices haven't risen to the same extent. Actually, Ray White Commercial said, if you gave somebody the land for free, the developers still couldn't deliver it, and it would be almost like a negative land value. In some instances, prices have to go up, and we need to be building more units. The average price of pre-sales and under-construction projects in Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Brisbane, and the Gold Coast rose actually 34% in the year to the December quarter. That's according to the latest figures from Urbis. Demographics group demographer Simon Kerstmacher said that there weren't enough developers, builders, or construction workers in Australia to meet housing demand. We don't have enough multi-million dollar soupy sexy luxury dwellings. We don't have enough median price dwellings. We don't have enough affordable dwellings, he said. Sure, I get the point. Building is a low margin industry, 15% these days. And if things go even a tiny bit wrong on low margins, you go broke, he said. As a builder, you can pick and choose. You'd rather build the northern beaches where the margins are higher, to which I would add also, of course, you might actually decide to build some of the projects from the public sector, which are more secure. Although the Albanese government announced that apprentices who worked in the residential housing sector would receive $10,000 bonuses, an incentive geared towards its construction target of 1.2 million new homes, additional taxes to builders and developers such as council and special infrastructure contributions in a market that was already constrained doesn't help the delivery of new homes. In addition, feasibility and enabling infrastructure restraints, such as connecting sewage, water, and electricity, were the greatest challenges to building more homes in Western Sydney. It turns out the New South Wales government collected more than $650 million in special infrastructure contributions as at last September. Infrastructure contributions imposed on developers and builders were being passed on to home buyers who are already grappling with constrained borrowing capacities, increasing property prices even further. Stuart Ayres, the chief executive of the Urban Development Institute of Australia and a former New South Wales trade minister, questioned whether too much of the cost burden of building new homes in a burgeoning suburb was imposed on too small a base of tax, or just home buyers and the developers. Should that cost be spread over a wider tax base, i.e., the rest of the taxpaying community, to lower the rate at which the home buyer has to pay, he asked. Somebody has to pay, of course, at the end of the day. Governments were also holding back building enabling infrastructure in Western Sydney to reduce their costs and were encouraging the market to construct more infill homes and in more central locations, Ayres believe. If the cost to construct those apartments exceeds the ability for that part of the market to absorb, then we get no new apartments and we're not investing in the infrastructure that allows greenfield development to come online, he said. That's why the states right across the country are falling further behind their National Housing Accord target. So the simple point is this: with migration still pumping demand and supply falling massively short of what is needed to catch up, the net effect will be higher home prices, higher rents, more pressure on households to leverage up to buy or to pay more for rent. And on Tuesday, in my live show, I'll be analysing the latest financial pressure on households at the local level. So if there are specific postcodes you'd like me to include in my analysis, drop them in the comments below. I have, by the way, had some requests already from my earlier show, which summarised the latest national results, which were pretty diabolical. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.